Hi everyone, sorry you have to come back into the cold, but I promise I'll keep this quick. Just a disclaimer, this is very work in progress. I just started my PhD working with Jim Thompson, and I'm working with gamma ray signatures. So this is a little outline. I'm going to go over the background of gamma, a couple of working hypotheses that I'm working with, trying to get my dissertation set up, methods, results, and the future research that I'm going to do. So first of all, what is gamma ray spectrometry? Gamma rays are formed from energies produced by radioactive decay, resulting from alpha and beta decay. Gamma rays are actually very random and not time dependent. They can get excited at any time and do what they want, really. So it's really fun to try to figure this out. So the abundance is mostly emitted from potassium, uranium, and thorium. And then there's an equation that the instrument gives you is called dose rate, where it multiplies the three elements. 95% of the measured gamma rays are emitted from the top 30 centimeters. There are gamma rays coming from below that, but it gets attenuated, the signal does. And then you can do this aerial or proximal. Gamma rays go up to 100 meters or so, so you can fly it over if you want, but I'm working with more proximal here. So gamma is energy. So you can see the different bumps where they're like, okay, between this energy and this energy, this potassium, uranium, and thorium, such and such. So this is just kind of how you can find where it's at. There's other bumps in there, but the measurement isn't quantitative enough for it to be counted into gamma radiometrics. So I have a couple of working hypotheses. Gamma radiometrics respond to geologic differences in soil materials, and some soil properties are correlated to measured gamma. So the instrument that I use for this project is called a RS-230-BGO. It's from Radiation Solutions. It weighs about 2.7 kilograms or 6 pounds. It's got a 6.3 cubic centimeter crystal, and there's a bigger version of this instrument that has a 4-liter crystal. And this instrument actually does about 80% of its capacity of that 4-liter crystal. So it's a lot smaller, and it works better for handheld stuff. So the methodology that I did for this project is I had 6 soil pits dug in 2 different geologies in West Virginia. And then I made this great grid on my floor with a wider, this one, where it's a 200 by 127 centimeter grid, and then the actual grid cells itself are 10 centimeters by 25.4 centimeters. I took one assay, which is at 1 minute, like 1 minute survey in, within each grid cell, and then again in every horizon. I had the local NRCS come by and describe these soils in full detail, and that's how I wasn't biased with my horizons. I just did where they said the horizon breaks were. And then I also took a soil sample from each grid cell, not the grid, so like 100 samples per pit. Here's the research locations. If you're not familiar with West Virginia, I worked near Morgantown, which is where the university is, and then out way out in the panhandle, it's flatter for West Virginia, but flatter. And this is the soil at the one closer to Morgantown. It's Eric Indo-Aquoff. And then the Kearneysville Farm, which has a typical paleo-UDOF. So both alpha soils is what we were going for. The 3 soil pits were all 3 dug in these 3 similar soil mapping units. It gives us some real results. So on here, I have the 4 types of gamma emissions that we were measuring. And blue is the agronomy farm, and red is the Kearneysville farm. So what this is really showing is that the agronomy farm is producing more gamma emission than the Kearneysville farm, at least in thorium and potassium in the dose rate. The uranium is really funky. It's hard to understand. I'm still really working with that data, but as you can see, it gets a little crazy. These are the averages of all 3 pits to the depth. Sorry, I didn't say that before. And so I'm going to go through a series of these pictures from each pit. So this is what each grid cell, I just put it in Excel and did the color schemes. There's less gamma emission in the top, more closer down towards where you find the actual bedrock. So the closer you are to the actual mineral, the higher the gamma is going to be. And so sometimes you can see the horizon breaks, like between the BT and the BTG one. So I'm going to go through, so this is pit one. There's the three pits that are, pit one, two, and three are at the same site, and then four, five, and six are at the other site. So this is pit one. Pit two, you can see that break between the B prime TG and the BC. It really kicks up when you hit that C material, which really makes sense in gamma. And then this is the third pit at that same site. Again, when you hit that C material, it really kicks up in gamma emissions. So these are the same the same scaling as the others, so you can really see that the three other pits had a lot more gamma emission. The pit four potassium just wasn't there apparently, but I checked it several times and people were, it is what it is really. But you just can't really see the horizons as well. These are all three are really similar soils. You can kind of see the VT and that potassium, which is the red. So after that, that was just very visual. Going into some statistics on this is, again, it's very, very preliminary. I did some paired T tests corrected with Bonferroni at adjacent depths, so where I used the 0 to 10 and then the 10 to 20. And then I did additional lags where I put 0 to 10 versus 20 to 30, 0 to 10, 40, 30 to 40, and so on. I did four lags. Then I also did a pooled comparison between the adjacent horizons that were put out by the NRCS. So I'm just going to show you potassium and dose rate because those two are the ones that seem to have the most pull on the horizon findings, which is what we were really trying to do. And so what I'm showing here is that the layers just 0 to 10 and 10 to 20 are significantly different, and then 40 to 50 and 50 to 60 are significantly different. I'm going to go through a series of this with the different lags, and you'll see that. So this is the one lag. This is the two lag. The only one that came out significantly different is the 0 to 10 and the 20 to 30. And then so the farther apart you get, and throughout the horizons or the profile, you find more significantly different. So this is 0 to 10 and 30 to 40 are significantly different, 20 to 30 and 50 to 60 significantly different, and so on. So when you get even farther apart, you find a lot more significant. So it's, what this shows to me is that it's finding at least the A horizons and the B horizons, which is still something, but I'm still looking into more things. This is the dose rate. I'm just going to click through these kind of fast. I think I'm running out of time. So you see there's still a lot of significance between them. And this is pit. That was pit one. And this is the pit six at the other site where it has less actual significant difference amongst it. These soils are way too close to being together the same. Not too much significant difference. Down at the bottom, it gets significantly different. And again, in the dose rate, there's just not as much difference in these soils. And so then I did the adjacent pooled t-tests where the AP is different than the BT. The BTG1 is different than the BTG2. So it can find those horizons if you do the pooled data. But again, this is potassium, and this is dose rate. BT and BTG1 different, BTG and BTG1 different. This is pit 6 in that other geology in the limestone, where there's definitely significant difference between these. So the summary, soils from the same geology demonstrate similar results. There's greater significant difference among layers in the pits 1 through 3 than the pits 4 through 6 in the two geologies. So it works better in the black shale than it does in the limestone. Why? I don't know. So for all the sites, the potassium and the dose rate are the most significantly different. That's because, like, I don't know if you remember before, but dosrate has the potassium is the highest pool on dosrate. This may or may not be useful. Like it's very open for use still. And then the significant difference is more apparent between the adjacent horizons rather than the layering that I did with the 10 centimeters. So some future research that I'm going to be doing here is what are the actual limitations of the instruments? What is gamma spectrometry responding to? I'm actually still running. I took like 600 samples this summer, so I'm running texture, pH, organic carbon. I'm using the XRF in mineralogy. And I also, in the field, I took bulk density and water samples, water content samples. So I'm going to be trying to form some regressions and see what's really happening here. And then finally, like, at what scale is it necessary to provide effective information in gamma? And I'd like to acknowledge these NRCS folks and the guys that dug the holes. With that, I can take some questions. Yeah.
So, quick question: did you look at ratios? A lot of ratios are showing quite a bit.
Yeah, that happens a lot in the literature. I haven't gotten there yet,
okay.
But I have taken that into account. Where I'm going to put that into the regression. Any others? Perfect. Thank you.